You're listening to Jenny's Real Talk on the Block with Jennifer DeVoe, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, 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 all you entertainment holics out there in Radio Land. It is time again, another thrilling, exciting, and Jenny's Real Talk on the Block, coming at you live each and every Wednesday from 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific Time. That's 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, only on LA Talk Radio. We are syndicated and distributed by the following: iHeartRadio, SiriusXM, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, iTunes, Spotify, Audible, Spreaker, Podbean, Blog Talk Radio, and a bunch of fucking other places.
Yeah. But
anywhere, literally anywhere that you can be heard or seen as far as podcasts go. And I'd have to list, like, there's like 30 fucking places on here. It's just too many. I've gotten us syndicated fucking everywhere, like literally everywhere. Video-wise, you can go see us on YouTube, Vimeo, Twitch, TikTok, and Instagram Television. These are the big heavy hitters now. We are with Sony. That means Sony The Orchard.
By Sony.
Art 19, BMG, and 5050 Global Music Incorporated. Those nutty, crazy people down there. Sorry, it's just Quizzle Starks. What's up, Quizzle? We manage the following bands and artists from around the world. These ones I actually do have to list the whole fucking thing, so one moment while I do this. I have to do this because they'll kill me if I don't. Right. Maze from the United Kingdom. Dirty Machine from Los Angeles. They're a new metal and alternative metal band. We've got Scott Plant. He does a little bit of everything from, he's like pop and soul, RB. He's like, he does a little bit of everything. EDM, whatever you want to call it. He does everything. He's from New Hampshire. We got Freak Show, which is a metal band from San Diego, California. We got Jocelyn Sky from Los Angeles. She does pop, post-pop punk, that type of stuff. We got DJ King J. He is a hip-hop artist from California. We got Our Frankenstein. They're a metal band from Los Angeles. Berserk. They're like metal, hard rock out of Los Angeles. Hollywood Nightmare. Well, that says it all right there. And I don't mean Hollywood fucking Florida. So get that thought right out of your goddamn mind. Right. The real Hollywood, the only Hollywood here in California. Hollywood Nightmare. Hell yeah, they're a metal band. We've got Cleaver. They are a hard rock band from Santiago, Chile. We got Thomas the Red, the Viking comedian. If you'd like to hire him for your next fun event, birthday parties, corporate events, this man can do it all. He'll bring his bag of swords and possibly a dildo or two to your next function. He's going to be trapped with Heinz the Animal. So hit me up if you'd like to hire him for your next fun event. I'd say please not a child's birthday party, though, because might be misconstrued. Let's not do that. We got Star Daddy. We got Vokills, Wicked Star. They're a hard rock band out of LA area. Band of Family from the hard rock band from Bakersfield, California. Author, screenwriter, China Myers. Also co-host to several radio shows and television shows about to be launched this year. Besides just Jenny's Real Talk on the Block, of course. We've got actor, producer Derek Webb from New Hampshire. Or I'm from New England, so we like to call it New Hamster. We all know each other. We're from New England. It is what it is. We got Mortis the Devil's Reject. He is, I don't know what category to fucking put him in. So metal? Alternative?
Industrial horror.
Industrial horror core. There we go. Very good. Thank you. Then we'll get into who the hosts are of the show in just a moment. We've got, of course, Lillian Mortis. She's a freak show performer, burlesque dancer, and horror actress and scream queen, and also a sci-fi actress. We've got the Borderline Radio Show with your DJs Carol Dyack and Bruce Blaine from Italy. Please go vote for Carol Dyack. She's in the running for best female DJ in the world, basically. So there's a bunch of female DJs that are all competing for this battle. So please go and vote for my Carol Diac. That's K-A-R-O-L and then D-I-C. They're from Italy, from Southern California. Black Sabbatha, tribute to Black Sabbath. They're female fronted. High Priestess Dawn Marlowe. She could read your tarot cards and read your aura and all kinds of other crazy stuff. Yeah, we China is a test.
Yeah, he read me. She had everything right on, and I didn't tell her anything.
She's in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, yeah.
You can read all the way from across the country. That's pretty badass.
Yeah.
We got actress Lisa O'Neill. She's also the front woman for Black Sabbatha. And she's also for SoCal Wreckers. So if you want to see, they're a really great cover band in L.A. We've got Burn the Ships. They're a new metal band out of Bakersfield, California. Aussie Train. They're a female-fronted Ozzy Osbourne tribute. We got Jane's Addicted. That's a female for Jane's Addicted. He plays with fire, but in a good way. He does all kinds of crazy shit on stage. He does the grinder wheel, all that stuff. Just like same as with Lillian Mortis. They play with fire. They do all kinds of like freak show and circus performing. He also does. They also do like where you staple money to their skin, like literally.
What?
Yeah. And for the more money you put up, the better the place you could staple it.
Oh.
What'd she say? What'd she say? $10 for the ass, $20 for the tit, and $50 to $100 for the punani.
Oh,
hey, whatever. Some bitches like to be stapled in the punani. It is what it is.
We eat his own.
Hey, sometimes a gal's just got to do what a gal's got to do to make that money. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That means getting a big old staple attached to your crotch. And that's the way you got to go. we got Lucas Humphrey, a.k.a. Tekketeshen from Green Jello. T. Puma, hip-hop artist extraordinaire. We got Red Rock Engine, hard rock band from Canada. They're also members of Green Jello. And then we got Suppressed Intentions from Southern California. They are a metal band. And then we got Skyscraper, which is a David Lee Roth tribute band.
Oh.
And then I just added a new member to our family.
All right.
And that would be actor Ozzie Capri.
All right. Congratulations.
He's been in shit tons of movies, especially anything pretty much to do with James Balsamo, actor. He's a director, actor, producer. And movie premiere last Wednesday in Hollywood, red carpet movie premiere. Great times until you go to get your truck and realize that your two side windows have been bashed in.
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible.
Crazy.
I park in the hood on a daily basis. Never had my vehicle broken into. And when I say the hood, I mean crackheads, meth heads running around this bitch, and I've never had a problem. But I go to Hollywood once, one time. And I park in a nice area of Hollywood, up by the boulevard, over by the Roosevelt Hotel. And my shit is broken into. Whatever. It is what it is. The windows have all been replaced. But God damn it, my Lumines airbrush makeup system. Three pairs of contacts. And my anxiety pills. I will never forget. Never forget. Never forgive.
Yeah.
That's motherfucker, lucky I catch the middle. She's from New England, from the middle of the fucking woods. We from the middle of the woods. We gonna go hardcore on your bitch ass.
Wait, don't mess with the lipstick. You done went too far.
Don't mess. Yeah, you touch my fucking Lumines airbrush makeup system, bitch.
Wow.
Probably in the
I only pulled out the heavy hitters when I'm going to the red carpet.
Yeah. What'd you say, Jennifer? Anyway,
I said it was probably the perfect shade you'll never be able to find again.
Well, it was one of those guns, like the travel guns that
Buy. They're
awesome. The really nice ones that you can take it with you in your purse and shit and just do it on the go, you know?
I had like three, but I can imagine it's cool.
Yeah, and they got three bottles of the makeup. I still have one of the other, the home ones you put on the wall, and but still, goddamn it, was my travel one, and that just pisses me off. But anyway, that doesn't really matter right now because we're with an amazing guest. amazing guest, and we're gonna like I wrote a little I just copied and pasted this, but anyway, I'm gonna take credit for it. I'm just kidding. We've got in the house author Jennifer Irwin. Thank you to Jennifer Perry, PR extraordinaire,
yeah,
who we love, and go check out Jennifer Perry's radio show or podcast, Madam Perry's Salon, which I have been honored to be a guest upon, as well as author China Myers.
Yeah,
but real quick,
the genie bottle, and you live to tell the story.
Yeah, dude, I love that woman. She is the fucking shit, man. Yeah. So our host for the show, off 50 directions. I got to remember this. We are Jennifer DeVoe Muse and James Muse, aka Jenny and the Muse. And his bald-headed ass is coming this way right now. Hold that thought. There he is. Oh, look, he popped into frame.
Hi.
Jenny and the Muse. Our wonderful co-host from Pennsylvania, author, screenwriter, and radio host, China Myers. Yeah. And then, of course, I don't know where the fuck Derek is, but he's been having some problems lately, you know, physical and home-wise, whatever, and we're going to pray. We're going to pray for Derek Webb. Actor, producer Derek Webb, I don't think is with us again today. I'm just going to keep praying for his ass that everything's going to be all right. And we'll stop by and see him on our way to Maine in a few weeks. So, yeah. All right. Christina Giggles is being silent somewhere in Los Angeles. but today our guest is author Jennifer Irwin. And we are here to talk about her new book, A Dress the Color of the Moon.
Yeah.
It's a follow-up to her award-winning debut book, A Dress the Color of the Sky. It follows the protagonist of that book, who has gone to rehab for sex addiction and now has to navigate the world again with new coping skills and revisit the messes that she left behind. So
I got so many questions.
Yeah,
so go ask away, my friend. Away.
Okay, I know, but tell our listeners: is this fiction or nonfiction?
So the first book I did loosely based on my life, especially the childhood parts and a lot of the experiences from my marriage, just the way. My relationship evolved, that kind of thing. But the whole, like most of the sex addiction stuff, I mean, I don't know if I'm a sex addict. But
I am.
but the story culminated from my own experiences in my childhood. Then the sequel, which is really interesting because that is 100% made up. I am getting a lot of DMs about, is this true? So I must write very realistically because the second book is like all made up. The whole thing's made up. I mean, I did do a lot of deep diving into the stripper world just to make sure that was all very realistic.
I manage a few strippers. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You wanted to be accurate. So
I wanted to really have it all
to the source.
That's smart though. That's smart.
Yeah. And that was a lot of fun for me, honestly. I went to Vegas and I got to go backstage.
You go to some strip clubs?
Yeah, I followed some girls. They were really open and honest. I did one-on-one interviews, did a very long phone interview. So it was great. I went to a lot of strip clubs in LA, of course.
Me too.
Yeah.
But by choice, not for research.
Yeah.
Seventh Veil, Body Shop, and Crazy Girls are my favorites.
Oh, yeah. There used to be a really good place by the airport, but the Goose, I think it was called the Goose. It was just topless. That place was great.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Spearmint Rhino.
Yeah, the Spearmint Rhino. That's a good
There's
one.
There's too many in LA.
There too.
Too fucking many. But yeah, I need alcohol.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. So basically, yeah, the first book was loosely based. I'd say it was 40% true. And the rest of it I made up and kind of made a better story so that it was. And I taught Pilates for a long time, so I got to really get to know women and a lot of hearing different kinds of women, talking to them, how their lives are. And it got me really to get into women's heads and how they think and just how different women see their bodies and just a lot of the issues that we all have that, you know, come out in different ways. So, and then the classic divorcee who just goes kind of wild and gets back in touch with their sexuality and goes through a lot of control. And, but typically a guy who has a lot of sex is a stud and a girl is a slut. So yeah, so much of, you know, knowing what she's doing and purposely doing it, just like dudes do. And it's not really, you know, it stems from her childhood, basically. That's how it came about.
Do you find that a lot of the women have body dysmorphia?
Yeah, I actually deal with that a lot in the book. Okay. I think that women, it's interesting. Some days are really, really hard on themselves. You know, they'll just be so down, like look in the mirror or just verbally, you know, criticizing themselves. And then other days they're like, you know, actually today I look pretty good. I like my butt. Like you'll see days where they're really admiring themselves. Like when I was a Pilates teacher, I definitely saw that. I could see shifts just really, you know, and then the eating, the very beating themselves up over eating and what they ate over the weekend and, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, so a lot of eating disorders, would you say? Like you
just like how food can trigger self-hatred and eating something that's really pleasurable and then feeling bad about it because then it's going to make you fat or you gained a couple of pounds and then you're like, why did I eat? And then it's like this vicious cycle. So
yeah. Well, I guess I got to write a book about, you see, because I have a certain methodology, and my methodology is homeostasis. If you look that word up, it basically means keep to a regimen, you know, stay the same if that works for you. And if it doesn't, change, you know. This thing about women, and I noticed that more in this day and age. My mom was 160 pounds, and she had a small waist, and woof! I mean, she had the biggest hips I've ever seen. I mean, I have the same, and I have the same body. I mean, I'm not as big as she is, but I have the same body. And guess what? I see women spending thousands of dollars to try to get a butt and hips like I got. And And all the time I'm saying to myself,
Eat a Twinkie.
Go ahead and eat a Twinkie if you want. See,
eat a few Twinkies. You want a bigger butt? Eat some stuff.
Honestly, I'm glad that the curves are coming back and that, I mean,
how about it?
The grunge, like in the 90s, like the grunge and the women were just like, you know,
you see those pinup girls? They were like 160 pounds.
Yeah. Marilyn Monroe was bigger. She was a size like 12 or whatever, 12 to 14.
She wasn't a skinny woman.
Everyone loved her. So like,
and
you know what I mean?
It's just weird. I don't know where this happened that people think that they have to, women think to both.
The 70s and 80s with models like that coming into the 70s and the 80s and the cocaine era and a lot of that, they felt that women were supposed to be skinny and stuff like that. Now, I watch a lot of, and I know this is men, but I watch a lot of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I love that.
And they pad themselves to look like natural women with, they call it swerves and curves.
Well, yeah, and that's what we have. And everybody's different, too. You know, that's another thing. People don't realize, and I realized this at an early age, I'm never going to be skinny. I'm never going to be bones because it's not the food that I eat. First of all, I put butter on everything.
Who doesn't love some butter?
I'm sorry. Okay. And then
I think I've just eaten too many donuts recently.
You have to live your life. I mean, I can be honest with you. My mom was not like your mom. My mom, like, was just constantly beating herself up over her body, wanting to be thinner, struggling, going to different gurus to help her get thin. And
Okay.
At her funeral, there was like the healer, the dietitian, the this, the that. I mean, she
had
Yeah, and she was 6 feet tall and like 150 pounds. I mean, she was not a huge.
That's tall and thin. That's my model.
Yeah, that she needed to weigh a certain amount in her mind. And that's
her mind.
Constant source of. So I think that probably fed down to me.
You
know, it made me definitely more aware of like my body. And also I modeled and modeling can really have that. Like you're a little too healthy. You know, you need to lose some weight. You know, and so I'm really happy that curves are coming back, that everybody's really wanting to have a bigger butt and embracing that womanly figure. You know, and I also feel like women are being more sexual and like open about their sexuality, and it's not so shameful to
50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah, that's really kind of like this
that opened a lot up.
Yeah, that was like a springboard for a lot of my book that my Pilates studio was like lit when that book came out. I mean, women were just, I was training very proper women in this very upscale community. You know, you didn't get a lot of, I mean, once in a while, it'd be like a girl saying, I need a new handbag. I'm going to have to blow my husband. You know, one of those.
Who hasn't had to say that at one time or another?
Whether indirectly or directly.
Did you have to do any research into other aspects?
I had nightmares about a lot of the stuff that I heard. I went to a lot of SAA meetings.
And what's that? Tell our listeners what that is.
Anonymous. So they had blood meetings, and I would go to them all over LA. And I mean, I heard like the gnarliest. I actually was talking to someone recently who is addicted to massage parlors, and that was like very common in the SAA meetings. That was like a real. And men, like they would be in relationships and be having like regular sex and not like being starved for sex, but they just couldn't stop themselves from going to these massage parlors. It's like a real addiction.
Were they just guys talking like that? Or women?
Typically women. So what I found is that women who are sex addicts have had sexual trauma as children.
That makes sense. So,
can't differentiate love and sex or their body they sort of step out of their body. But the other thing about addiction in general is that it's more the buildup to the sex. It's not really the act. Once the act is happening, the bubbles burst. Mm-hmm. So it's like getting ready, the sexting, the excitement, the, you know, we're going to meet up. We're about what should I wear? How is it going to go down? Once it's all actually happening.
But why can't they be that way with their mate?
Yeah, so it's just this sort of addiction. It's an addiction that you can't, you know.
Yeah, it's like anything else, drugs, alcohol.
Yeah.
It's like that. I work with a lot of people like that, and I'm open about it. Like I used to own a swingers club for like 2 years. I was a member of a BDSM club, stuff like that. I have had some struggle. I don't want to say struggles, but I have had in my past like issues with sex addiction myself because I'm bipolar, and that's a big aspect is,
either you
have no sex drive at all, or you have a really really rampant high level sex drive. It's bipolar. It's on and off. It's on and off. Sometimes you're like this, and then sometimes you're not. You could go months where you're just like, you want to go to all these. You know, I used to be like, oh, I want to go to all these parties. I want to do this. I want to do that. And I mean, I had a guy living with me, and I still, he wanted to be in a relationship with me, but I would go to a swingers party. I literally, he pissed me off on Valentine's Day. I left him home.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, my father was bipolar. He was a total sex addict. I mean, completely. Mm-hmm. But when he was on one of those like binging high kind of rampant.
Yeah. It's not all the time. Now that I'm older, I'm 49 now. So my libido has completely like gone through the floor because of because of being older, and it's yeah. nothing to do with anything. It's just I have no, you know, yeah. you get to a certain age and you just shit like shuts off for a while. It does. Like, it's not as important.
One of the issues that you see is that men can take Viagra and like are still very, you know.
But what can we do? What can we take? You know what I'm saying?
Can't keep up, and then they leave their wives that they've been married forever and much.
You know what I mean? Like,
it's sad. It happens.
But a lot of times, if that happens, it you know, a lot of women tend to blame themselves for that. But in actuality, I don't think it's about
women blame themselves. Come on, let's just listen to how many times a woman says, sorry, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I say it all the time.
Stop apologizing. We're always apologizing. I mean, it's just, you know, it's ridiculous. But I know that, like, in my life, I was sexually assaulted as a child. So I know that really screwed up my image of sex and kind of. I have less boundaries and I have less, like, I don't, most women bond when they have sex. Most women are very associate love with sex, but I didn't. Like, it was really hard for me. So I just wanted to create a character that had these issues, that had some trauma, and kind of make her lovable, but poor.
Some people out there saying, yeah, I got that same problem. What can I do?
Yeah, no, I've had a lot of therapy. I've gone to retreats. Through, so I based the treatment in my book on the Meadows, which is basically PM Melody wrote Finding Codependence. And as the child of a drug addict, alcoholic, I ended up marrying an alcoholic, and I knew there was a reason why I married an alcoholic. I'm codependent. Yeah. I thought I could help him. I'm a caretaker. I mean,
Went
around the Meadows. No caretaking, you know, you're not allowed to do this because that's your survival mechanism. So they caretaker, they don't want you to do that in rehab.
Just,
you know?
Yeah, when you're an alcoholic, they don't want you to be in any personal relationships.
Right.
It takes time to work on yourself, you know what I mean? I was replaced by a friend in my 20s. He held me hostage, tried to murder me.
Oh, yeah.
Me on many occasions, dragged me down Hollywood Boulevard by my hair. He did a lot of horrible shit to me. He used to beat the living shit out of me, slam me off walls, all kinds of stuff.
That's like a multi-abuser. I lost count
as to how many times he raped me. We talking 60, 70 times. I don't know. I went to counseling for all the abuse here at a place in L.A. I went to a place for like a year. But because
What was the name of that place?
I don't even remember, to be honest with you. It was so many years ago. We talking like, you know, this was 1997 to 98. I went to this. I went to almost a year of counseling. And he only served like 2.5 months in jail for it.
What?
Yeah.
Well, that's the other thing. Nobody wants to come forward because they don't. They're going to drag
you. I didn't testify.
Dragged and everybody.
I was scared.
Yeah, it's really a problem. I mean,
I was terrified to even go against him. Like, so I didn't go to the trial, and so he only served 2.5 months out of a 4-month sentence. And I ended up getting with another abusive prick immediately after him. I thought the guy tried to save me from this other guy
mentality. So that's very normal and very common. A victim typically has what they call a victim mentality, and. Oddly enough, I learned through the research in my book, if you've been raped and you have not been able to really process and heal through it, you have this victim mentality and the chances of you getting raped again are double, triple. And then each time, like it happens over and over. And I've been in these group therapy sessions with girls who have been raped 3 and 4 times. And they're like, I just don't know. Like, you know, there is not even these happening. And it is really, really common. I'm very floored by how many people reached out to me after reading my book that they too had these experiences and that they have had trauma and that, you know, thank you for sharing the, you know, this story in such a realistic way. And
I did it without crying this time.
Oh, I'm glad. I mean, honestly, thank you for sharing that. It's very hard to talk about and it's very shameful. Even though you're a victim, you feel so much shame. And I really hated carrying all that shame around. And And I wanted to get to the bottom in my own life. Why did I marry an alcoholic when I knew I was one? And there was I just needed to unpack all that baggage and kind of process everything that happened in my childhood, you know, so that I could find self-love and actually, you know, be in a healthy relationship. Yeah. Offered was in the book, her sexual assault story, that she had been grabbed on a bus when she was like 14 and asked people to share hers. And it was a woman tweeted every second. It was Twitter accounts to share their stories.
So many women have been through it.
Yeah, that's.
But there are men that have been through it too. Right. So we need to point that out also.
Yes. No, there were actually men as well.
But they come forward even less than we do because of the male mentality that if you've had something like that happen to you, then you're not a man.
Right.
You're less than. Right. And even if it was just regular abuse, not sexual abuse, still. Like my mother was abusive to my father.
Verbal abuse.
Never said nothing. He never did nothing because he's a man and
you know what I mean?
And you were a child. You were a little kid. You're a child, you know, an innocent child. And that's really sad. Childhood that shaped and molded who you are and ended up with somebody abusive.
I was abused by my mother. And so it was my older sister and my dad. And so I went on to, I had a good relationship when I was a teenager. I was with a wonderful man, one of the nicest human beings on this planet. And I married him, but I didn't feel that I was worthy of him.
That's
so I left him and ended up going into abusive relationships instead.
Oh, I'm sorry. But now you're in a good one, right?
Oh, yes. No, this man, the muse is the shit. He's an amazing man. He's a good person.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's
a long time to figure it out.
To heal from these things, and it's a process. And just peeling those onion layers the way you are right now, and just continuing to share your story. And just by the way, sharing your story, you saved your life.
Yeah.
You know, you can survive. You can get through, and you can actually find healthy relationships after such traumatizing experiences.
Right, and I believe, and I talk about this a lot when I go on interviews talking about my book. I believe that we're a victim at that time, but then we've got to learn to move forward.
Yes, okay? No, you're right.
And when you move forward, you can actually open up other doors. But when you don't move forward, you're stuck.
Yeah.
You know? And when you're stuck, it's the worst place to be, because it's almost like if a sandwich was stuck in the garbage, what's going to happen to that sandwich? That sandwich is going to disintegrate. You know, bugs are going to come to it. It's going to be like horrible. So we just learn. But then after that happens, you're a survivor of that situation. So that should help you move faster forward, you know, because if you stay stuck.
You have to. So the saying is to accept your past. You can't close the door on it.
Because you learn from that, too. Either.
But to accept what happened, to really get through and process what happened and then move forward. The life of your
future.
And especially for children like myself, when I was a child, you know, I was sexually assaulted. So by someone that I, you know, needed to follow rules by, someone that told me they would, you know, hurt me or kill my mother if I told anybody.
Sorry you ever had to go through that, especially as a child.
Right.
I think that's even worse to go through something as a child than even as an adult, because you're little.
Also, the thing I learned about myself is that going through that stunted my maturity.
Because
you never really are a kid. You're almost all you were, you know, so I tend to be a little immature. And it's kind of funny, but I've had so much therapy, I can catch it when I'm really immature.
I want that chocolate.
My son
and my nephew were abused as kids. So I understand being the parent of a child that has had something like that happen to them. It wasn't a family member. It wasn't anybody that was part of our family or anything. It wasn't anybody, you know what I mean, like that, but
Yeah.
It was, you know, it was traumatizing. They were little, you know, a lot of therapy with them to try to help them to process and move past it.
Well, I'm glad you've been there for them. And honestly, just talking, it's the secrets that make you sick. It's holding in the secrets. It's like just having poison inside you and not, you know, and thinking that you're going to survive. You just can't. You gotta get the poison out, get all these, you know, things out that are traumatizing, and don't carry them. Like you said, you have to move forward, you know, and it's as hard as it is, you just can't, you know.
The problem is you don't realize that you have to move forward, because all you could think about is what happened. And you try to rationalize it. Now, I wasn't sexually assaulted as a child, but I'm trying to find myself in that person's child. It would be horrific, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know people that probably at that moment don't want to go on, you know?
Yeah. But it messed with his mind, my son's mind, a lot. It really traumatized him to the point where he questioned his own, like, sexuality, because it was...
That's a very common.
It was actually a male.
Yeah. It typically is that way. It's typically men, pedophiles that are attacking young boys. And I think that, I mean, I read the whole Sandusky trials. I mean, I just seeing how many kids he, you know, damaged, and people just looked the other way. So we just have to.
It's horrible.
You know, he's something that doesn't look right, it's not right, you know. Listen to your
guy. Right. Completely.
And I think I have three sons. I didn't really like them going to sleepovers. I mean, I was kind of paranoid. I'm not gonna lie.
But that's understandable,
right?
Considering what you had gone through.
Yeah.
You did not want your children to experience the same things in life.
Yeah.
Right. I just really wanted to be there for my kid, you know.
I didn't want to, at the same time, ruin their childhood over what happened to me and try and make them really.
No, but still, it's understandable. Like,
tell me if something, you know, you always can tell, you know, I shared with them what happened to me and that it does happen. And
trust your sixth sense, though.
Yeah.
Always trust your motherly instinct, because when you feel something is wrong, you need to trust that gut instinct.
Exactly.
I wish I had never let my son and my nephew go with a certain person that day to that house. Watch me, don't let him go.
Women are.
But I didn't trust my gut. I didn't listen.
Yeah, we do. We have a lot of intuition. I call it God's voice. I mean, call me crazy.
Yeah.
But sometime. In fact, my son said it to me. He's 34 years old. He just said to me the other day, he said he got this. He was driving, not to change the subject. I'm not trying to digress here, but he was driving and a cop pulled him over. And the cop said, where's your insurance? So he showed him the insurance paper. The cop said, you don't have insurance. And he gave him a ticket. So my son fought it. Filed to appeal it, and he went to court. At first, he was saying to himself, I got insurance. I'm not gonna pay that hotel. And then said, and the judge threw it out. But he was thinking,
But that sounds like a case of racial profiling.
Like a very sketchy cop.
I want to let it be known.
There's a lot of that.
All cops aren't bad. You know,
no, of course not.
I've ran into some good ones.
Not all cops are bad.
That sounds bad. That sounds bad.
He seemed a little shady. Maybe he was trying to get his quota, and he was hoping my son.
I do think they do have to do quotas. Yeah.
He might have been racist. Who knows? He might have been racist.
Who knows?
But yeah, there's a lot of that bullshit in America right now.
I love the conversation that we're on about women and surviving things. But tell me how you came up with both your names for your books, because they're amazing. I really like Too Catchy. Oh,
thank you. So there's actually a fairy tale called Donkey Skin. It was like 1500s. You know, the queen dies, and on her deathbed, she's like, if you ever want to marry again, she has to be fairer than me. And so the king, in all his madness, wants to marry his daughter. So since I was molested, and this book is a lot about how to unwind the traumas that happen in your life. And I thought that fairy tale really had deep meaning to the story. Okay. So basically what happens is the girl doesn't want to marry her dad. She goes to a fairy nymph, and the fairy nymph said, have the king make a dress the color of the sky. He'll never be able to do it. And then you won't have to marry him. And so, and then it goes on to address the color of the moon. And then finally address the color is the third dress that she has to, the king has to make. And every time the king makes these dresses that look exactly like the sky and exactly like the full of jewels and whatever, so it's a fairy tale. But anyway, that's came up with fairy tales in the book a little bit, but I like to call the book Girl Interrupted with Orange is the New Black. It's like there's a lot of therapy and group therapy, and everybody's pretty raw in the smoking area and where they talk about their lives, and then in group, you know, how the protagonist thinks when other people are talking. And you get to everybody's backstory on the different, what brought these people to rehab and what are their stories and that kind of thing. So it solves a lot of that curiosity and fear over what does rehab look like? What is it like for people to be in rehab? And you know, you can go there if you're codependent. You can go to rehab if you have the trauma. I mean, there's a variety. It doesn't necessarily have to be because you have an addiction, you know.
Right.
You can go there and work on yourself. Want, you know,
and I tell people, if there's something going on with your mind, think of it as, you know, a diabetic or, you know, someone who has, you know, some sort of eczema. If you have a problem, even if it's your mind, you should get help. I mean, there's nothing wrong with
that. You have a plumber, you have a leak, you're going to call a plumber. You have a broken bone. So,
there's no shame in that, you know. And I want
to a lot of people, to know. To a lot of people there is, but to a lot of people there is.
But there isn't.
Societal pressures have taught us that you're crazy.
Yeah,
it's a weakness. Don't know. Oh, that's just bad. That's wrong. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Oh, just, you know.
Yeah.
I heard a lot of women when I was teaching Pilates saying that their husbands wouldn't go to counseling.
Yeah.
One of the things
that's a common thing.
Yeah, the guys are too proud or whatever. But a lot of what happens in the marriage counseling is by the time they go, it's really far. It's a game.
Yeah, fixable.
So,
which is sad.
I always encourage couples when they first meet and they're in the real high phase to just go to a couple therapy sessions and
the honeymoon phase.
Yeah. Isn't that the funnest? I mean, we're always so, you know, that's the high that the protagonist in this book is seeking at all times. Is that
It's
not realistic. Right.
No, it's not realistic. But
the next high after that is the one called Intimacy, which is a beautiful high. And that is a true gift in love.
Right.
So if you can find that and you have the patience to get through all the other stuff, and then you find that high may be even higher than that when you first met.
Exactly. Because love is something, you know, that is inside us, and we desperately as human beings seek it, you know, and if we could just know the difference between loving. I could never, even if my husband wasn't able to have sex ever again, that doesn't mean I'd stop loving him, because that's separate, you know.
Honestly, I would not say the same thing.
See,
we're not married, but I struggle. I don't really associate sex with love.
See,
sex is survival. Okay. It's like you have to have it. It's like air, but it's very. That's also part of my childhood trauma that I still struggle
that makes
with.
Sense.
I'm working on.
But you got to know and you got to learn that the two are different, you know. When you're having sex with you love him, but really it's totally different, you know. I look at my husband and I think, oh, he's so handsome, you know, that's love, you know. Look how sweet he is, he put the garb, you know, seriously.
Gotta love those acts of service.
I think about when he gets old. Oh, I'm going to take care of him. So, you know, because I'm into health and he's getting there. So I'm thinking, if I have to take care of him, I'm going to take care of him like I would my child. I would just, you know,
See, do my ex-husband told me unconditional love doesn't exist. And when you hear that for 19 years, you really believe it.
Yeah, that's not true.
You know, and
that's not true.
It does exist.
I have unconditional love for my children. Why can't I?
Yeah, I obviously for your child that's different, but yeah, for a partner like a marriage or
I'll take care of his old ass. No problem. Right up till the day he croaks.
He's like, hell yeah!
I'm taking the main, me, my kids, and our whole family are going to take care of his old ass. We got it.
Now, Jennifer, yes. Tell me this. Yeah. You said you got help, right?
Yeah, a lot.
Where did you go? In case there's somebody out there right now.
I actually buried and suppressed. I started having a lot of nightmares that I was being choked by a hairy potato. I know that sounds really graphic and weird, but I started having terrible nightmares, and I started recalling things, and I had very much suppressed everything that ever happened to me until it kind of like it was like this bomb that like
exploded. Imploded, yeah. Right.
I went, so there's a retreat, a woman in Los Angeles through the meadows, and she does this whole retreat that kind of breaks you down and builds you back up. It's pretty hard. It's in a group, and it really gets down to the root of what happened to you. So I
get to
so that was to see her for private therapy. And I went to a trauma specialist therapist here in Los Angeles. I didn't have a lot of money. I was very poor after my divorce and really barely hanging on. So the problem with a lot of therapists is it's really, really expensive.
Yeah. They want a lot of money.
I didn't really have insurance to cover it. So there's places you can go. There's centers you can turn to. There's hotlines. There's all kinds of
things. Just go online. Yeah. Phone, laptop, look it up.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
you have to suffer in silence is the most important thing.
Right. Exactly.
Well,
right.
Unfortunately, ladies, we've got to wrap it up. But I've had an amazing time with you. I hate it being only 50 minutes because it really doesn't. I want to keep talking to you because you're a snake, Irwin, award-winning author, Jennifer Irwin, for being on our show today and talking to us about such deep issues.
Yeah.
And China and I are about to launch a new show called That's Real Talk, and we would love to have you come back on that show to talk about these type of issues. Yeah. And we could have a 2-hour fucking show for all I care.
Because I would love that.
Thank I'm the producer, so and I'm paying for this shit. So
you guys
they can
are
fuck
so inspiring. I can't believe you're starting another show. I'm so impressed.
We've got a few other shows that we're working on starting this year. So we've got four other shows we're launching this year. So great things to come. But please tell everybody real quick where they can find you. Like you buy your book,
I have a website, JenniferIrwinAuthor.com, or I'm on at everywhere, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Jennifer Irwin Author, at Jen Irwin Author, I guess, basically. So, but my website is all my social media links. So you can
awesome. You can buy my books. Go buy her books. The newest book is thank you so much. The newest book is Address the Color of the Moon. And also go check out her first book, Address the Color of the Sky. Buy her books, Kindle, physical copies, whatever you can do to support her and this wonderful story of struggle and love and addiction. And thank you so much for being on the show today. We really appreciate you, and we will definitely have you back. To talk about more things. We would love it. And you've been an amazing guest. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Until next week, we're going to be back with alternative rock band Vitamin XP. Jenny's Girl Talk on the Block, LA Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, and Sony Music Entertainment. Peace.
On the Block with Jennifer DeVoe, only on LA Talk Radio.